Thank you so much for those words. But the most important part of my credentials here is that I used to be a teacher in Stern. So this goes back about a long, long time, about 25 years, so give or take. And the old years when my wife was not in Stern, she was working at the time, but she would always come for the Monday night Hilchos Shabbos here, and she would always bring brownies. So that was always a special treat for everybody, especially during midterms and finals. Okay. So I was asked to speak tonight. I think it's one of the most difficult nights of the year to speak, because what in the world am I going to talk about? I'm going to get up and give a shiur about Hanukkah? Come on. It's a little bit passe. I'm going to speak about Purim. It's a little bit ahead. It's a Shana Muvaris this year, so I got an extra month. So what in the world am I going to talk about? So I thought that maybe we talk a little bit about almost the time of the year, or really the time of the week, so to speak, between two events, almost two bookmarks, two bookends on the calendar. One Hanukkah, and next week is Aser B'Teves. Now we hope the prayer Aser B'Teves won't happen. It'll be a great yontif for the Beis Hamikdash is rebuilt. But we are within those couple of days between Hanukkah and Aser B'Teves, and maybe it's a time to take a little bit of a step back and to see what are some of the lessons, some of the ideas we could walk away with. So although at first glance they seem to have absolutely nothing to do with each other, one is a week, of course, of 8 days of celebration, and one is one of the fast days associated with the Churban, but yet they are very, very much linked to one another, because they both involve the Beis HaMikdash. And each one in their own way really highlights just the centrality the Beis HaMikdash has in our lives. Hanukkah here, we just finished 8 beautiful days of celebrating a nace that's thousands of years old, which primarily revolved around the Beis HaMikdash, Chagigas HaMizbech, Chagigas HaMenorah, and yet it was alive and very, very much in our hearts these last 8 days. And now, next week, Aser B'Teves, we begin one of the tiniest mourning destructions of the first Beis HaMikdash, well over 2,500 years ago. And yet, no matter what, as long and as far away the Beis HaMikdash is from us, both in terms of time and space geographically, it is still very, very much a part of us. I once was presented with a very, very fascinating conversation. It was one of the most eye-opening conversations that occurred to me. And you would think it took place in the Beis Medrash or in the shul or by the kosel, you know, something like tapping me on the back. No, no, no. It happened in the barbershop. I don't spend too much time. It doesn't take me too much time in the barbershop. But this particular conversation took place in the barbershop. It was actually the day after Tisha B'Av. This goes back, I don't know, 15, 20, I forget how many years ago. It was the day after Tisha B'Av, and I was getting a haircut from a non-Jewish barber. And the non-Jewish barbers, you know, definitely the ones in Jewish communities are well aware of the sink of the Jewish calendar. They know when Sfira is, they know when the 3 weeks are, they know when business is good and business is not so good. And it was the day after Tisha B'Av, it was fairly crowded, and the barber knew that, you know, people were coming back for haircuts. And the barber commented to me that, you know, I just want to express my condolences, said to me. I feel, you know, sad. I know it's just finished a very, very sad period of time. I said, yes, we did. And the barber said, you know, I know that the temple was destroyed, and the temple was, you know, and I know it's a very hard time, it was a very hard time for the Jewish people. So I said, you're right, we appreciate it, thank you so much. And the barber said to me, you know, it's been a few years, right? It's been about 10, 15 years or so since the temple was destroyed, right? I said, 10, 15 years? I said, it's been almost 2,000 years. They dropped the scissors practically. They didn't know, what? They couldn't wrap their hands around that concept. It happened 2,000 years ago, and you're still not getting haircuts? 2,000 years ago, you're still sitting on the floor? Or, to put a little bit of a happy, it's been 2,000 years, and you're still lighting a menorah? I said, how in the world can that be taking place? And the answer is because the Beis HaMikdash is so much a part of the Jewish people, that even though it's been so many centuries and millennia, yet the Beis HaMikdash is still very much a part of us. So I thought we'd speak a little bit, both in the world of Halacha and the world of Machshava, as to what that means exactly. What are the parameters of this statement that the Beis HaMikdash is very much part of us? And we find in Chazal, there are really three different applications of this principle. There are really three different dimensions of what it means that the Beis HaMikdash plays a role in our lives. We can always break it down into what we call the Hoya Hove V'Yia. Hoya means what the Beis HaMikdash was like in its glory. Hove means what the situation is right now, b'churbano, in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash. And the third is Yia, what it's going to be like, Nehemiah ben HaMikdash, our yearning for the Beis HaMikdash. And this is primarily in the world of Halacha. In the world of Halacha, there's a Hoya, namely, there are certain practices that we perform that are done, what it's called, Zecher LaMikdash. Not Zecher LaChorban, Zecher LaMikdash. we reenact and relive what life was like in the days of the Beis Hamikdash. And there are certain mitzvahs that we perform specifically for the purpose of reminding us what the Beis Hamikdash was like in its glory. Some of them are fairly familiar with. Throughout the Yom Tovim, as great and as majestic as the Yom Tovim are in our days, there was clearly something missing. Each and every Yom Tov was so linked to Mikdash, and the absence of the Beis Hamikdash, a Yom Tovim pale in comparison. And yet Chazal, time and time again, emphasized to us how important it is to celebrate the Yom Tov as best as we can with the spirit of Mikdash. And just a few concrete examples. Go back to your mind a few months ago to the Yom Tov of Sukkot. Min HaTorah, you only have to shake the Luv and Esrog one day unless you happen to be in the Beis Hamikdash. Usmachtem lefnei Hashem lekechem shivas yomim. The Mishnah tells us, V'shechor HaBeis HaMikdash Hiskin Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai instituted that you have to take the lulav the entire week. Why? Zeichel HaMikdash. Imagine how the Jewish people felt that very first Sukkot after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Tisha B'Av was just 2 months before Sukkot. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was trying to think, what can we do to keep the Beis HaMikdash alive, knowing that who knows when it's going to be rebuilt again. It may take centuries, it may take millennia, and it's still almost 2,000 years, still hasn't been rebuilt. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, but every Jew in every corner of the world is going to pick up a lulav on the third day Chol HaMoed. Why? Because that's what they used to do in the Beis HaMikdash. And if that's what they did in the Beis HaMikdash, that's what we're going to do today as well, as much as we can. Karbanos we can't. There are Yisurim in the Torah, you're not allowed to offer Karbanos. But what we can do, we are going to reminisce, and we're going to relive. And that's built into the world of Halacha. The mitzvah of Sviras Omer, according to many opinions, is not a mitzvah min HaTorah anymore, because Sviras Omer min HaTorah only applies, according to many, many views, when the Korbanos of the Korban Omer are brought. So why are we counting it for? For one reason, Zecher LaMikdash. That's what they did in the days of the Beis HaMikdash. That's in fact the reason why, right after we count Svira, so one of the first words out of our mouth after we count Svira, Harachamanu Yachsi Elvanu Avodah Beis HaMikdash Shemkoma. Why do we say that? We don't say that when we do other mitzvahs, because this is a mitzvah that, according to many opinions, is Zecher LaMikdash. Therefore, it's the most apropos time for us to daven Meheri Yaban HaMikdash. And many, many, many other examples. We wish one more quickly it comes to mind. We sit down at the Seder, and we fulfill the mitzvah of matzah, and we drink our wine, we have our maror, and all of a sudden we come to a part of the Seder. Zeichel, a mikdash, kehillel, all of a sudden I'm sitting in Bergenfield, New Jersey, 2,000 years later, 6,000 miles away, and I'm doing what Hillel used to do, bizman shebeis mikdash ha'kayam. Why? Because zeichel, a mikdash. You have to remember what things were like in their glory. That's one whole dimension of our connection to zeichel, a mikdash. And even the octave that we just concluded, our last halakas neiros last night, if you were paying careful attention to the phrase that we said, a neiros halalu, kodesh heim, ve'ein lanu rishus l'shtamish b'hem, the Ran in Masech HaShabbos tells us, why is it that you can't use neiros Hanukkah? What's wrong with using neiros Hanukkah? So some say the only reason why you can't use neiros Hanukkah is it's an embarrassment, it's a disgrace to neiros Hanukkah. There was one opinion in Rishon the Baal HaMaor who maintained, if you want to learn by the neiros Hanukkah, that's great, that's beautiful, why not? That's not an embarrassment, that's an enhancement. And we don't pass like that. Says the Ran, you know what? We don't pass like that. Neiros Chanukah are not prohibited because it's an embarrassment to Neiros Chanukah. You know what? It's prohibited because it's Kodesh, because it's holy. It's Mikdosh, because it's supposed to remind you of the Beis HaMikdosh. We read this morning about the end of the Nisim. So the whole celebration of Chanukah is Mikdosh, 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 and more Mikdosh. And Neiros Lol Kodesh Heim, we're sitting in our homes thousands and thousands of miles away, and thousands of years after the days of the Chashmonaim, and we become transported to a world of Mikdosh. So Chazal built it into the Jewish calendar. From Yom Kippur to Sukkot to Pesach to Shavuos to Rosh Hashanah to every day, every Yom Tov, time and time again, we relive the Beis HaMikdash in its glory. That was Hoya. That was the past. But the reality is, Hoveh. We live in a world of now, the here and now. And the world of here and now, there is no Beis HaMikdash. And now we live in a time of Churban. And in a time of Churban, therefore there is an appropriate halachic response to Churban. How do you live with the fact? How do you survive in a world knowing that the jewel in the crown, Beis HaMikdash, is not there? So the Gemara tells us in Maseches Bava Basra that when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, there were a whole group of individuals who decided they're going to stop eating meat and stop drinking wine. And it made a lot of sense. You know why? The Karbanos or meat or wine. How could we sit down to a steak? How could you sit down and have a cup of wine when the Mizbeach doesn't exist, when the Beis HaMikdash is in flames? And Chazal, when they heard about this group, they said they were very well-meaning, very noble gesture. But Chazal turned to this group of individuals and said to them, you know what? If you're going to stop eating meat and drinking wine, you really should stop eating bread as well. Because the Korban Mincha, the flour offerings, were also not offered anymore in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash. They said, you know, you're right. And Chazal said, you know what? If you're going to stop eating bread, you're about to stop eating fruit because there's no more bikurim, no more first fruit are brought. They said, you know what? You're right. And then Chazal turned around and said, and you better stop drinking water because there's no nisach hamayim either. And at that point, the people said, what should we do? So Chazal responded, we're going to institute things called Zeichel Chorban, but we're not going to make it what's called the Gzeirish Ein HaTzibichol Ma'amad, but we're not going to make a decree that the people can't live up to. To make these very, very strict demonstrations of Avelos that are going to be literally impossible for the Hamonam, for the average person to observe, that's not correct. We're going to make a modified version of Avelos. And therefore Chazal instituted a whole series of different things that we do, Zeichel Chorban, different halachas that we do, to remember the Beis HaMikdash b'Churbano, things of the here and now, b'Shas HaChorban, and the intricacies of them, some of the halachas that we're familiar with, Tisha B'Av is of course part of that world, and the Taimios, to the lesser extent, the Asar B'Tavis, the Tzom G'dayos, the Rosh B'Tamuz, are part of that world of Beis HaMikdash b'Churbano. The minug that we have, is that really a minug? It's really a takona, that you put what's called Eifer Rosh Choson, that you put ashes on a Choson's head under the chuppah. It's supposed to be also reminiscent of Zecher L'Chorban. So there are many, many different takonas that Chazal had to make sure that people do remember the Beis HaMikdash, but not the Beis HaMikdash of its glory. That's the Sukkah and the Sfiras Omer and the Korech. It's the Beis HaMikdash B'Churbano as well. That's the Hoveh. But then there's the year, the future. The Chazal built into our entire mitzvah observance the notion of the Heiri Yibon HaMikdash. There's going to be a Beis HaMikdash that's going to be rebuilt, and it's going to be rebuilt in a moment's notice. It can happen at any time, terrifying. The Rambam writes that part of the Ani Ma'amin of Mevias HaMashiach is not just to believe in this theoretical idea Mashiach is going to come at 500 years from now. Mashiach is going to come now, right now, right now. B'chol Yom Sheyavo. The potential for Mikdash can happen literally, terrifying. There is a Gemara in Maseches Rosh Hashanah and Maseches Sukkah, very, very fascinating discussion, about an event that took place soon after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, after the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Once again, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, some of you may remember from the story, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was the one, the leader of the Jewish people, who actually was insisted that he go meet the Roman general to try to plead for Yavne, and he was taken out by his students in the dark of night, in a coffin, to try to get past all the guards. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai led the Jewish people at their darkest hour. And the Mishnah, the Gemara tells us, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai made a takona. He made a new ruling soon after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. It was a very, very technical ruling. It had to do actually with the halachas that governed Chadash and Yashan. Some of the halachas about this new grain, one cannot eat until the Korban Omer is brought. And the halacha is slightly different. But there's no Beis HaMikdash, then instead of following when the Korban is brought, it depends on when the day of the Korban is brought. Very intricacies and details, not relevant for us right now. And the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai made a whole new legislation because he was afraid, imagine, catch that word, he was afraid, behavior upon a Mikdash at moment's notice, and the Jewish people could be caught off guard, and they're not going to remember to bring the Korban to Omer on time. And he made a whole Shtikl Torah, a whole halacha that lasts till this very day, predicated on the assumption that basically it's just going to be rebuilt in a moment's notice. I ask you, if you lived in the time of the Roman Empire had taken over the entire world, the Jewish people had just been decimated, the Beis HaMikdash was in flames, and the only thing on the leader of the Jewish people's mind was to add another few hours to the prohibition of Chadash, because Meheri Aban HaMikdash. What Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was trying to tell us was, a Jew goes into Golos, a Jew enters into the state of Churban, but he knows that it's temporary. It could change at moment's notice. Where did Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai get this chizuk from? Where did he get this idea? Who started this idea? Who built us into the DNA of Klal Yisrael that Meheri Aban HaMikdash, literally, any given moment? We find that Yaakov Avinu was the Av who really personified Golos. He spent a significant amount of time of his life, both in the Golos of House of Lavan, and then later, in this week's Pasha, and this week's Pasha, Golos of Mitzrayim. And Yaakov Avinu goes to Golos really twice. And if you look carefully, Chazal pick up on two fascinating pieces of information about how Yaakov Avinu goes into Golos. One is a throwback to Pashas, the end of Pashas Toldos, the beginning of Pashas Vayetze. Yaakov Avinu runs away for his life, ends up leaving Eretz Yisrael, escaping from his brother, and he's on his way to the house of Lavan. Did you ever think for a second what he took with him? How many suitcases do you think he had with him? It depends whether he was going to get a second suitcase for free, whether he had, you know, extra matmid points. The Torah says about Shas Vayishlach, Kiva Machli Avarti Esayardin Hazeh. Chazal say, you know what that means? Kiva Machli, it means exactly what it means. Nothing. He had a stick in his hand. The couple of things that he had thought he would take along were stolen by Alifos anyway. He had a stick in his hand. So I don't understand. If he had a stick in his hand, how do we understand the psukim in Parshas Vayetze? Where in the world did he get this jug of oil from to pour on that rock that he slept on that night when he experienced the dream of the ladder? The Torah says he took a jug of oil and he put, where did it come from? He carried a jug together with a stick. What was he doing carrying a flask of oil? So one of the Mefarshim quotes a tradition, I don't know where the original source of it is from, but it appears in Rishonim, that Chazal had some kind of a tradition, Kiva Machli Avarti Asayardin Azeh. Yaakov Avinu only had a stick in his hand, but there was a hole in the stick. And before he left the house of Yitzchak and Rivka, he put some oil inside. And he carried that stick with some oil. Why? Because he knew that there's going to come a time when he's going to have to dedicate a Mishkan, a Beis Hashem, and the Jew has to be ready ASAP. There's no delay. You can't start draining around looking for oil. You have to be ready to pack your bags, ready to build the mikdash at moment's notice. That's how Yaakov Avinu goes into Golos. And that was the legacy that he transmitted to his children. You go into Golos with 1 foot out of the Golos already. You're already looking to leave. And that notion appears again in this week's parasha. Yaakov Avinu goes to Golos a second time. And what does he take with him? Chazal tell us, he took down cedar wood, atze arazim. Why in the world is Shlapenzuch heavy, heavy? It's over 22.2 kilos, whatever the number is. It's heavy. Why is he schlepping this wood down? Chazal say, because there's going to be a Mishkan that's going to be built. And Klai is all going to need to Atze Shitim Omdim. Come on, the Mishkan is going to be hundreds of years. They're going to Avodah for 210 years. Someone will figure out how to get wood in 210 years. No. Yaakov Avinu says, I'm not budging, I'm not going into Golos until I already have the remedy, I already have the Mishkan to be 1 foot out. That's where a Jew goes into Golos. He's already looking Meheri Avonah Mikdash. He already has his eyes to the future. It's that eye to the future that kept the Jewish people alive for the last 2,000 years. That notion, the Yaakov Avinu wants to instill in us, in Parshas Vayigash, that when you go into Golos, you're already 1 foot out of Golos, can sometimes be misapplied, misunderstood, and sometimes abused. One can take the attitude, well, I'm only here temporarily. I don't have to make the most of it. I don't have to build yeshivas. I don't have to build shuls. If the roll, we're leaving anywhere, packing our bags. So Yaakov Avinu has a second lesson for us. Before he steps foot into Mitzrayim, it's Yehuda Shach Lefon of Horus Lefon of Goshena. He sends Yehuda to go set up a base at Talmud, Shisham Tetzi Arol Yisrael. Why is that so important? Because lest one think, we're only here for a little while anyway. Why bother building yeshivas? Why bother having a Kabbis Torah? What do we need shuls for? We're in and out. No. Yaakov said, you're right. Psychologically, you have to go with the mindset you're out, but Kolzman, you're here. You better make sure that your Makomas HaTorah are up to par. Because if your Makomas HaTorah are not up to par, when the Zman HaGula comes, there'll be nobody to hear the call. So Yaakov Avinu teaches us that dual message. It's not contradictory message, it's complementary message. This is how a Yid goes into Golos. This is how a Jew goes into Golos. He goes into Golos knowing that he's not here forever. He schleps his oil with him, and he schleps his atzei shitim with him. At the same time, he builds yeshivas and shuls and becomes of Torah in the Golos itself. That's how you live with the life of Meheri Avonah Mikdash with the world of the Mikdash Ma'at, all simultaneously. So these are the three messages that Chazal built into the system. Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai realized all these truths immediately at the time of the Churban and transmitted it to his Talmidim until this very day. That this is how we approach Beis HaMikdash. As Hoya, we remember, and any opportunity we could take to relive it, to make a proper replica in a proper halachic sense, we will do. We acknowledge the reality that we're b'shas chorba now, and therefore there's still a Tisha B'Av, and there are tiny hills, and there are dvarim shel aveilus that we do, and yet we have an eye to the future of Yeh as well. This notion of the centrality of the Beis HaMikdash, that it was in our lives, and is in our lives, will always be in our lives, we have to stop and ask ourselves a little bit, just what exactly is this Beis HaMikdash all about? If it's so critical, so basic, so fundamental, what exactly is it really supposed to accomplish for us? So let's go back a step. Before we talk about the Beis HaMikdash, why don't we talk about the world in general? What is that keeps this world going? So we have the famous Mishnah. The Mishnah tells us in Pirkei Avos, Ashlosh Edvar Ma'olam Oymed, that the world stands on three things. The three things that are prerequisites, three things are conditions. If these three things cease to exist, then the world can no longer survive. Al Torah, V'al Avoda, V'al Gemilas Chesodim. It's said over in the name of Chaim Volozhiner. Chaim Volozhiner was the Talmud Muvak of the Vilna Gaon. He was one of his miyased. He founded the great yeshiva Volozhin, the forerunner of all the yeshivas that we have till this day. Chaim Volozhiner commented that he thinks the reason why Kadosh Baruch Hu created the world in such a way that there are time zones. Why did Kadosh Baruch Hu have to create the world like that? He could have created the world in such a way it could be the same time every single place. Chaim Volozhiner explained because it would be the same time in every place. So then, it'll come 11, 12 o'clock at night, the whole world will shut down at the same time. And the Beis Medrashes will be quiet, and all will be learning, and then the world will self-destruct. So Kadosh Baruch Hu built it in such a way that when it's 11, 12 o'clock in New York, people are starting to wind down, the yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael are first waking up. And when the Bachurim are going to sleep in Eretz Yisrael, the Bnei Yeshiva in Chutz Laaretz in the middle of second Seder. So Chaim Volozhiner didn't want to rely on the rest of the world. He wanted to make sure that his own yeshiva Volozhin could keep the world going. And the minhag of Volozhin was that Torah never stopped. They had cycles, they had mishmaros, they had different groups, that they had different times for minyan schedule and different times for meals. And the Beis Medrash there was always a minyan of people sitting and learning in the Beis Medrash at all times. They would even have Motzei Yom Kippur. There was one group that the minute that Ma'ariv would be over Motzei Yom Kippur, there was one group that would not go eat right away. Their job was to learn for the first half hour. First group would go quickly, they would come back, they would trade places. So Chaim Volozhiner didn't trust the rest of the world. He wanted to make sure Volozhiner itself could keep the world alive. So the world stands for Torah, stands on Avodah, Avodas HaKarbonos, and on Gemilas Chesodim. So we think of these three things, Torah, Avodah, Gemilas Chesodim, only one of them really reminds us of Mikdash. Avodah is referring to Avodas HaKarbonos. Avodah means different things in different places. Avodah here, I'm sorry to say, doesn't mean to go to work. Go to work is an important thing, but that's not what the Mishnah means. It means Avodah, means Avodah Sakarbonos, or Bizman Hazeh Avodah Satfilah, which is the place of Karbonos. So at first glance, the only one of these three that's really, really Mikdosh connected is Avodah Sakarbonos. What does Torah and Gemilas Chasodim, what exactly do they have to do with Mikdosh? What is the role of Limud HaTorah in terms of Mikdash? What is the role of Gemilas Chasodim in terms of Mikdash? We sometimes erroneously think that the Beis HaMikdash was a place of Karbonos. That part is not erroneous, that's true. But that was only one dimension of the Beis HaMikdash. And not necessarily even the most important part. It's true that Karbonos can only be brought in the Beis HaMikdash, but the Beis HaMikdash was much, much, much more than just a place to offer Karbonos. The Pesukim tell us explicitly in Novi, Ki mitzion teitze tzorot v'Hashem Yerushalayim. Doesn't say ki mitzion teitze karbonos. Ki mitzion teitze tzorot v'Hashem Yerushalayim. The word of Torah emanates from the Beis HaMikdash. And in fact, we know this is true in the world of Halacha, that the Beis Din HaGadol, the Sanhedrin, the court that represented the greatest group of Talmid Chacham, the Gedolei Olam, Chazal, the ones who interpreted the Torah Sheba Peh, the ones who made the Gezeiros Terabbanon, the ones who instituted the Yontif Chanukah, the Beis Din HaGadol, they were housed in the Beis HaMikdash itself, because the source of all Torah is the Beis HaMikdash. And this is obviously the case. After all, what is the central place of the Beis HaMikdash, the most Kodesh part of the Beis HaMikdash? Not where the Karbonos are even brought, not even where the menorah is, not where the Shulchan is, not where the Mizbeach is. The holiest of the holy, the Kodesh HaKadoshim, there's nothing there. There's no avodah takes. Nothing happens in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. There's only one thing that's there, the Aron. Inside the Aron is the Luchos and the Sefer Torah. That's it. Because the holiest, holiest of holiest of everything is the centrality of Torah. The Ramban, at the beginning of Parshas Truma, explains that why did the Kodesh Baruch Hu create this model of a Mishkan? What do you need a Mishkan for? Says the Ramban, Har Sinai was the defining experience for Klal Yisrael, for the entire world. But it only happened once. It was 3,300 plus years ago. Now where do I go? Now I want to reconnect. I want to rekindle. I want to recharge my battery with the fire of Har Sinai. Where do I go? I go to some desert. I go to some mountain in the middle of a desert. And some tourist, some tour guide tells me, oh, this is where Mount Sinai was. I don't care where Mount Sinai was, says the Ramban. You know why? Because there's no Kiddush in Har Sinai anymore. That's why we don't care. We don't even have Misr. We have no idea where in the world Mount Sinai is. Nobody knows and nobody cares. Because the Kiddush of Har Sinai was temporary. And that Kedusha was taken and transported to the Makom HaMikdash. And says the Ramban in Chumash, the Makom HaMikdash became the permanent Har Sinai. Har Sinai was Kibisinai Teitei Sora, now becomes Kibitzion Teitei Sora. So the Beis HaMikdash is a Makom Torah par excellence. Remember, I was several years ago, I was sitting at the Kosel for a few hours. I was sitting and learning. And I was sitting and learning a complicated sugya in Dine Momenus, a sugya, the fifth perek of Bava Kama, sugya about one animal gores another animal, and this, kind of damage, you know, some very deep, you know, lomdish sugya. And my eye caught that there are a bunch of tourists, you know what those tourists look like. They're walking around, you know, with the cameras and kind of adjusting, you know, the cardboard yarmulke, you know the picture. And they're fascinated looking around. And they're videoing the person in the face who's sitting and pouring his heart out to Kodesh Baruch Hu for something. He's got the camera in his face. And then there's a little Yushalmi kid who's saying to him on the top of his lungs, so I think that's a good picture of that. And then I was really, really terrified that they're going to come over and start to strike up a conversation with me. And they asked me, what are you doing? So I understand. But the person who's davening for an esrei for now by the coast, I understand the kid who's saying tilim. What's this guy Sobolovsky doing? So let me explain to you what I'm doing. My ox was your ox, and we're trying to figure out, I claim you owe me $100, you claim you owe me $50, you take a shvu, you take a shvu, blah, blah, blah. What does this have to do with religion? What does this have to do with spiritual? What am I doing this in the Makom HaMikdash, the Chatzos Kodshecha for? What in the world am I doing here? And I thought for a minute, just in case, Baruch Hashem, they didn't ask me, but just in case they did, I would have given this whole shiur. I would explain to them, you know, 2,000 years ago, not only was this a place where you offered karbonos, this is a place where the Beis Gadol sat, Kimitzion Teitei Sora, this place is Mesugal, this place has that ability of being a Makom Torah par excellence. This is the place to learn. This is the place to say a shiur. This is the place to study the depths, the plumbing to the depths of Torah Kedosha. The most spiritual thing you could possibly do is you're sitting and learning Torah. You can't get closer to Kodesh Baruch Hu than that. And where would you want to do that if not the Makom HaMikdash, Kibitzion Teitei Sora? We sometimes think that the Kohanim's job was to offer karbonos. Yes, that was true. Anyone have any idea about how many days a year they did that? Less than a handful. Because there were 24 groups of families of Kohanim. There were 48 weeks approximately of the year. So you came to the Beis HaMikdash approximately 2 weeks a year. Out of those 2 weeks, each group, families, were divided into six further subcategories. You got to work the Beis HaMikdash about 1 day. So Sacha called 2 days a year, added a few days of Yom Tov, they needed a couple of subs. You worked in the Beis HaMikdash maybe 6-7 days a year. That was it. Can anyone tell me what they did the rest of the year? They didn't have any land. This was an agricultural society. What in the world were they doing? The answer is, they were the Malam de Torah. Yor mishpatech liyakov as a roschel Yisrael kisif sekar nishmu das Torah v'akshu reviu uvasla kohanim alavim asheiyah b'yom ha'em. They were the lomdi Torah, they were the lomdi Torah, they were the lomdi Torah. They were the ones who preserved for all of Kal Yisrael Toshi b'peh. What is that? The Kohen? I thought his job is to work in the Beis HaMikdash. The answer that is Mikdash. That is part of the Beis HaMikdash because the Beis HaMikdash itself is Har Sinai. It's all the same. Mitzvah Mikdash connects you with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. You connect with the Kadosh Baruch Hu through the world of Kabbalah. You connect with the Kadosh Baruch Hu through the world of Limud Torah. So when we say that the world stands on Torah Vevoda, Mil Chasadim, the Beis Hamikdash is the Makom Torah. So the world isn't quite standing. It's like limping a little bit. The world's hanging on for dear life today in the absence of a Beis Hamikdash. Because Torah isn't in its glory. Here we have a Mikdash. That'll come back. You can take a look at the very, very last Rambams at the end of Hilchos Malachim, where the Rambam describes what Yimos HaMashiach is going to look like. So the Rambam poses the question, why are we davening and dreaming of Yimos HaMashiach? For what? What, we should be rich? We should be victorious? We should control the world? What do we want Yimos HaMashiach for? Says the Rambam, El Kadei Shiyu Penuyim B'Torah V'Chachmasa. The world will be a peaceful world. The world will be free of sorrow. And therefore, we'll be able to do what we were destined to do from day one. When Torah, do mitzvahs, be Avid Hashem. That's the goal. That's the dream of Yimos HaMashiach. Nothing more, nothing less. That's the dream of Meheri Abani HaMikdash. To have a world of Torah and mitzvahs of Kedusha V'Tahara L'Adas as Hashem Kibbol Arz Deach Hashem Kabayim Liyam Chassim. So Beis HaMikdash is Torah. Beis HaMikdash is Avoda. Avoda B'Zman HaMikdash was primarily through Avodas HaKabbalos, but not only. Tefillah was a major component of Mikdash. Ki Beisi Beis Tefillah Yikar Chal Amin. Beis HaMikdash was open for all, Jew and non-Jew alike. Come to the Beis HaMikdash to daven. We don't have a Beis HaMikdash, we don't have Karbonos, and the Shama Formas Faseinu. All of our Hukas Tefillah is patterned on Mikdash. Why do we daven Shachmas when we daven Shachmas? Why do we daven Mincha when we daven Mincha? Why do we daven Mayim when we daven Mayim? Why do we daven Musa when we daven? All the Tefillahs are connected to Karbonos Tiknum. They all correspond to the different parts of the Avodas HaMikdash. Everything we do in the world of Tefillah, Adayim Ezeh, is a throwback to Mikdash. And no matter where we are, where do we face? 6,000 miles away, we face Mizrach. We turn, if we're in this part of the globe. We face Yerushalayim, we face the Beis HaMikdash, because somehow we intuitively know that all our tefillahs have to go through Mikdash. Mikdash is the vehicle of tefillah. So the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, we're missing Avodah, we're missing our tefillahs. There's something lacking. We're halfway, our tefillahs are not quite what they're supposed to be. Here we are, Mikdash. The world of Kibesi, Beis Tefillah, Yikar L'Cham, will come back to its glory. Gnuas Chasodim, that's a tough one. What does Beis HaMikdash have to do with Gnuas Chasodim? Up till now, we've been talking about Beram Lamachom and Torah and Tefillah, very religious. What does that have to do with me and you? What does that have to do with each other? What does that have to do with Midos Beram Lechavero? The Mishnah tells us in Masechah Shkolim that there's a mitzvah for every male above the age of 20, or Achloikis, maybe above the age of 13, it's a question of what exactly the psukim mean, to participate by giving a machtzis a shekel. Give a half a shekel to the Beis HaMikdash every year. The Kohanim had a great idea. They said, we're not going to give the machtzis a shekel. We're exempt. Why are they exempt? They came up with the following very lumdish reason. What was the machtzis a shekel money used for? To buy the Kabbanis Tzibor. Some of the Kabbanis Tzibor were Kabbanis Menachos. They were flour offering, meal offerings, Kabbanis Omesh, Alechem, Lechem Apanim. And those Kabbanis were supposed to be eaten by the Kohanim. There's a halacha when a Kohen offers a Kabbanis Mincha, Kolo Tielos Yachol, you're not allowed to eat it. It has to be burnt. Special Poskim, Pashas Tzav. So Kohanim said, Ahav, we're going to contribute to the Machtzis Shekel. We're going to be partial owners in these Menachos, and they won't be able to be eaten. And Reuchem and Zachar, the same Reuchem and Zachar from before, laughed at them and said, you guys, come on, it's a joke. That's a silly drush, it's not true. There's no truth to what you just said. Why not? What's wrong with what they said? The Gemara never explains what's wrong with what they said. Perhaps what's wrong with what they said is as follows. They misunderstood, what does it mean a korban tzibur? What does it mean the Jewish people offer a korban? You can understand that in one of two ways. Either you can understand it as being, it's Reuben, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, it's a 10,000 people's korban. Their partners? No, that's not a carbon tzibur. It's a carbon tzibur. There's a new entity called Klal Yisrael. It's like a corporation. There are no private owners anymore. There's a new entity, new being called Klal Yisrael, which is greater than the sum of its parts. It's a new chalashem called the Jewish people. That's not a minchas kohen. That's a minchas Klal Yisrael. And therefore the Kohanim could also participate. They could also contribute to Machtzis Shekel. That notion that Karbonos are miyachid of Klal Yisrael, perhaps more than any other vehicle that we have. It's in Beis HaMikdash that the Jewish people become the ultimate one. When a person gets an aliyah on Yontif, so the minig is that you make a mishabeach for the person, and you add a phrase to the Mishnah Berach that we don't say in Shabbos, the phrase that we add is V'yiskeh lalos l'regel. You should be zoichet to go l'il l'regel. You throw that into the Mishnah Berach. And the Mishnah Berach ends with the words V'yiskeh lalos l'regel kol Yisrael achov v'noi ma'amin. You should be zoich, we should merit to go l'il l'regel together with the entire Jewish people. The story goes that the Brisker Rav was davening somewhere once on Yom Tov, and the Gabbai, his eyes missed the line to say, he forgot to say im kol Yisrael achov. He just said V'yiskeh lalos l'regel v'noi ma'amin, and the Brisker Rav made him repeat the Mishnah Berach. Wait, you hate the Mishnah Berach? I'm meaning, what do we mean after repeat the Mishnah Berach? Brisker Rav apparently explained that if you go a lila regel by yourself or with 500 other people, that's not a lila regel. A lila regel means im kol Yisrael echov. It's the entire Jewish people come to Beis Hamikdash together. That's what Yom Tov means. Yom Tov is a miyachid of Klal Yisrael because Mikdash is a miyachid of Klal Yisrael more than any other vehicle that we have. And as such, when we mourn the Beis Hamikdash, part of that mourning, part of that avelus is the churban, is the destruction of that glue that held the Jewish people together. We have a little bit of it, the same way we have a little bit of Torah, so we have a little bit of tefillah. Not all is lost, but its glory is not present. And that's also part of the churban. That's also part of what we cry in Aser B'Teves. That's part of the avelus of the churban, is the fact that Klal Yisrael don't have that ability to be united through the vehicle of Mikdash anymore. It's perhaps for this reason that the Beis HaMikdash is the strongest force that we have in the realm of Ram Lechavera, that we find time and time again in the Nevi'im, primarily the beginning of Nabi Yishayol, the most famous, the Haftarah for Shabbos Chazon, where the Nabi screams out at Klal Yisrael, you're not up to par in your Ram Lechavera, you're not taking care of the Aniyim, you're not taking care of the downtrodden, the people who need you the most. Lamali rose in Chacham, what do I need your karbonos for? It's a startling nevuah. What does that have to do with anything? The fact that you're not giving tzedakah, that's a terrible thing, and you clap al chayt for that, what does that have to do with not bringing karbonos? Bring karbonos and give tzedakah. Why does every time the Navi criticizes us for not being good, b'nom l'chavero, why does the Navi then in the same breath say, and I don't need a Beis HaMikdash? What does it have to do with each other? The answer is, it has everything to do with each other. If the Beis HaMikdash cannot serve as the vehicle to unite Klal Yisrael, so the Kodesh Baruch Hu says, I don't need the Karbanos. I need the Beis HaMikdash first and foremost to be the uniting force in Klal Yisrael. When that happens, then the Karbanos are beautiful, the Olah Ratz and the Rech Lichoch L'Hashem. If not, then it's hypocrisy, and it's worse than hypocrisy. It's sacrilegious to have a Beis HaMikdash when you have infighting in Klal Yisrael. In fact, that's what the Gemara tells us in the second Baruch of Mitzia. One of the reasons why the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, because everybody stuck to their rights. I would take you to Din Torah and you would take me. Everyone was fighting with each other to get what was due coming to them. What's so terrible? No one was stealing anything. That's terrible. If somebody's really your brother, somebody's really your sister, you don't take your brother to Din Torah. Yeah, figure it out. Settle out of court. Everybody was so medactic to get every last penny, every last pruta that's coming to them. For that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I don't need a basic mikdash for that. And Chazal say that Siras Chinam was the cause for the downfall of the Sechah Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash that was still mourning. They still have a Sar B'Tavis Adayim Ezeh. What Chazal are highlighting is the fact that a Beis HaMikdash that cannot accomplish that goal of being a Mokom for Klal Yisrael to unite together in Avodas Hashem, that's a Nishke Beis HaMikdash. It's an empty shell of a Beis HaMikdash. Such a Beis HaMikdash, Baruch Hu has no interest. So we have a little bit of an idea as to what this Beis HaMikdash is all about. It's a microcosm of the entire world. It keeps the entire world afloat. Torah, Avod, the Gemilas Chasodim, without it, the Torah is not where it should be. The Avod is not where it should be. The Gemilas Chasodim are not where they should be. Meheri Ban HaMikdash. There's one last thought, really almost coming off the glory of the last 8 days of Hanukkah. Something that also, a little bit of a wake up in terms of just how significant Beis HaMikdash is. We sung the last couple of nights, Ufartzu Chomos Migdalai, Betimu Kol Hashmanim, that the Yevanim breached the walls of my towers, referring to the Beis HaMikdash. And then only then they were able to defile the oil in the Beis HaMikdash. So Chazal tell us that the Yevanim made 13 pirtzas, they made 13 breaches in the walls of the Beis HaMikdash. So the notion of a pirtza is a very strange idea. That happens to be halacha nuchas eruvin. When you want to surround an area to permit yourself to carry in that area, you're allowed to have a doorway. It would be a very, very uncomfortable place to live without a door. You can, once you lock yourself in, you're stuck. There's no way to get out. Of course there's a door. Every house has to have a door. Every Rosh Hashanah Yochid, every private domain has to have a door to come in and out. But yet the Gemara tells us that doorway becomes a little bit too big, that it becomes a pierce, it becomes a breach. And that could disqualify the entire Erev. That could knock the entire wall out of halakhically accomplishing what it's trying to accomplish. There's a Pesach and there's a Pirtza. We light a Neir Chanukah, at least in the olden days, on the Pesach, Chavayis, or Pesach Chotzer. You light the Neir Chanukah on the doorway. The Yevanim try to turn a doorway into a Pirtza. What's the difference? The answer is very simple. A doorway has a door. A door enables you to close it. When you have a structure that has a door that can be closed, you can judge and you can be careful what does and what doesn't come in. And there's a pirtza, and just a breach, just an open smash in the wall. Everyone's just coming and going, and there's no sense of any order, and there's no way to monitor traffic. It just, whatever comes in, comes in. That's a pirtza. The Yevanim understood that you can't just be metamei kol hashmonim right away. First, you have to make a pirtza. Once you make a pirtza, then there's no end to what results of that pirtza. So we look forward to Meheri Ban HaMikdash. Kadosh Baruch Hu is looking at us and seeing, have we learned some of the lessons that we spoke about tonight? Have we learned about the significance of Limud HaTorah? Have we learned about the significance of Avodas HaTfilah? Have we learned the significance of Gemilas Chasadim? And have we learned the significance of making sure that our Mikdash and all our holy endeavors are not subject to Pirtzas? Those are questions, hard questions we have to ask ourselves. So we're at a time in the calendar. We still have that joy of Chanukah still in the air a little bit. And yet, around the corner, around the bend, begins the Sarba Tevis. Sarba Tevis, chronologically, was the first of the Tainiyos. It was the first event. It's the last in the year, in the sense of the year beginning from Nisan, but it was the first, historically, of the events of the Tainiyos related to Churban. It's our challenge to be able to somehow come out of the world of a Sarba Tevis into the world of the glory of Meheri Ban HaMikdash. Kadosh Baruch Hu give us a siyata d'shmaya to learn the lessons of Mikdash well, to internalize the message of Mikdash well, and hopefully in the discourse of that, we should be zoicha very, very, very soon, Meheri Ban HaMikdash.